You know, in this day and age, it's so easy to be cynical and to be discouraged about current events. But when you march with these young men and women, all of a sudden, the world is good again because, you know, they're so motivated and so cheerful and optimistic that to an old grumpy guy, like a lot of my classmates are, we were just reinvigorated. You know, the idea was to encourage the cadets during the march, but me and my classmates all were uniform in our opinion that we were the ones who were encouraged.
Thinking of having your own podcast? Check out Anchor.fm. It's the easiest way to make one, and it's what I use for my podcast. What is life like for a military family? Hello, troopers. Welcome to the Afterthought on the Military Family Podcast, where you will hear stories straight from a military wife. And I am your host, Mommy Rich. Excited to explore adventures as a military family? Let's get started. Good day, troopers, wherever you are in the world. And we have another special guest for our episode for today. My special guest graduated from West Point in 1976 and served as an Army officer for 10 years before joining the State Department as a diplomatic officer. He has worked in many countries, including Honduras, Korea, Hong Kong, the Philippines, Ethiopia, and Kuwait. Who knew that going to West Point would set him on a different path to giving service again to the country? He then returned to the United States and became a professor of international relations at West Point. But what excites me the most is finding out more about his teaching experience at the Philippine Military Academy. He is married to the former Ceres Cawagas of Zambales, Philippines, and has three wonderful daughters who followed him into international relations. He loves spending time with his four grandchildren. Please welcome Sir Sunny Busa. Hello, Sir Sunny.
Hi, Reg. Thanks for inviting me.
Yes, sir. It is actually an honor and a privilege to have you in my show. So thank you so much, sir, for making time. How are you doing, sir?
Well, I'm doing great. You know, I just got back from West Point yesterday.
Oh, really?
At the end of summer training, the cadets march back to the academy from their summer camp. And so since it was 50 years to the day since I marched back myself, they invite certain members of the class of 76 to be part of the 50-year affiliation. So we marched back with them. It was 15 miles. And so I guess it was to encourage the cadets that 50 years later, you can do this again.
I can imagine, sir. And I'm sure being in West Point again and seeing these cadets march somehow brings back really good memories when you were doing it yourself.
You know, I was laughing with the cadets because they were in their full battle gear and they were carrying a 50-pound backpack. We didn't have to carry a 50-pound backpack, but we did have 50 extra years of weight. So I think it sort of balanced out. And so for the entire 15 miles, we just went up and down the line talking to them. It was for 15 miles talking to 1,400 cadets back and forth. And the march was pretty rigorous. But, you know, in this day and age, it's so easy to be cynical and to be discouraged about current events. But when you march with these young men and women, all of a sudden, the world is good again because, you know, they're so motivated and so cheerful and optimistic that to an old grumpy guy, like a lot of my classmates are, we were just reinvigorated. You know, the idea was to encourage the cadets during the march, but me and my classmates all were uniform in our opinion that we were the ones who were encouraged.
I was about to say that, sir. I guess it's, you know, it's two-way street when it comes to that kind of, you know, atmosphere we're in. Yes, these cadets get to look at you guys being able to survive, I would say. That's the term that I will use. But of course, in their time now, you looking at them would actually give you that kind of spark and energy of, you know, going through the day with them. So it was really a fun encounter with them, I would say, sir.
Well, it was fun for me, and I hope it was fun for them, except they were marching back to campus, which at the end of it will be the start of the academic year. And I kept reminding them the physical tribulations of summer camp and training is nothing compared to taking calculus and staying up all night and doing all your studies. And you're going to wish that you were still back training.
I can imagine, sir. So I guess we can start with our episode wherein I would like to ask, how do we start with this? Probably let's start from the very beginning. I'd like to know, sir, about, you know, your childhood and all the work. So how was Sunny Busa when he was a young child?
Well, let me see. When I was a young child, well, you know what? I still think I am a young child. I just have an old body. But, you know, when I think of myself, my spirit is still that young boy with all the hopes and dreams. You know, I came to the US when I was 2 years old. I was born in Borongan, in Samar, Philippines.
Oh, wow.
Okay, and it's 2 years old. And so I have no recollection of my life in the Philippines for that 2 years. But, you know, I had no shortage of relatives wanting to fill me in on that.
That's true.
So, you know, my father joined the US Navy. He was in the US Navy for 20 years, retired as a chief petty officer. He did really well. And so for my childhood, I just remember going from Navy base to Navy base with him. And I really enjoyed it, you know, going to school with all the kids of shipmates of my dad. So it was a very, very happy childhood. It was very egalitarian because we were all the same social economic class and we were all the same rank. So we didn't have those same stresses that you might have in another type of school. And so I always like to tell audiences that, yeah, you know, my years as a Navy brat, I liked it so much that I joined the Army.
I actually I'm going to lead to that question, sir. But before finding out what really made you choose the U.S. Army over the U.S. Navy, considering that you, your father was a U.S. Navy, I'd like to know, sir, did you find any like difficulty when it comes to adapting? Because you've mentioned earlier about moving or going to school for 3 years and then moving to a different school and meeting new friends. Was that difficult for you?
No, it really wasn't. It was just another opportunity to meet new people. And when you consider that a lot of your classmates were the same situation, we all moved every 2 to 3 to 4 years. And so you met other people who had to leave every 2 to 3 years too. And it's also very good in the Foreign Service when you have to keep moving too, but we can get into that later. Of course, it's good to have some stability and you can stay in one place and all that. So you just have to take the good with the bad. You know, it's not all roses, but for the most part, it's been pretty good.
Right. Wow. 'Cause I've talked to a few veterans from the Navy. They also, well, one of them is a Navy brat as well, but she was, you know, she was really having some difficulties because leaving, you know, friends when they were young and then going to move again and meet new people. So it really depends on the person how you would take the certain adjustments. But in your case, you really took it positively, which is a good thing.
Well, you know, being positive is a choice. And of course, you don't like leaving your friends. I didn't like that, or your neighborhood. And it's always wrenching, but try not to dwell on it. That's all.
That's true, sir. Okay, so you've mentioned about you choosing the US Army. So if I may ask, sir, your father was in the US Navy. you grew up with that kind of background. So why choose U.S. Army?
Well, you know, I was going to enter the service as a graduate of one of the academies, Annapolis or West Point. But I had an eye condition, which precluded me from flying airplanes. But the Army didn't care if you could see that well. They just said, you know, you can just go straight. And so I could do all the fun stuff in the Army, which the Navy wouldn't let me do because they had more stringent vision requirements. So
I see. But other than, like, how about the other branches, sir? During your time, was it a part of your choice to explore, for example, the U.S. Air Force or U.S. Marines at that time?
Yes, yes. I would have loved to have been a Marine. In fact, I still think about it. I think I would have been a heck of a Marine. But, you know, I was an infantry officer, which was about the same thing.
Right. And, like, as a teenager, sir, have you always been an active type of, you know, student in let's say, in the academics or in extracurricular activities in school?
Of course. I mean, you can't get accepted to a service academy without having top-notch grades and extracurricular activities and being an athlete. In fact, you know, I was on the admissions committee to West Point later. And the thing that we looked for in deciding who gets to be accepted, besides the grades, that was a given. You just had to be a very good student. That's all. And you had to have high SATs. So that's a given. And then the athletics, everybody's an athlete. Everybody, for instance, in this year's class, out of 1,400 that were accepted, 1,200 were varsity lettermen, which is the standard. And the other 200 were almost varsity. So they look for athletic excellence and academics, of course. But the main thing was ability to lead. And so you had to show that you had those activities and that predilection to make people do something that they didn't want to do, but they're going to do it anyway because you told them to. That's what selection committees have to determine. In my case, I was a varsity gymnast. We were one of the best teams in the country. I wasn't a top gymnast. I just happened to be on the team. So it's reflected glory more than anything. And, you know, I competed for West Point in gymnastics too for 4 years.
Really, sir? That is very amazing. You're very athletic at a very young age. So you joined the service at what age? And can you please, sir, describe to us how was the boot camp experience in the U.S. Army during your time?
Well, I mean, you joined the service the minute you entered the academy at 18. Boot camp was basically training at the academy. You're at the academy for 47 months. Now, no other college has you at their school for 47 months because at any other school, the academic year is only 9 months. Most you could have it at a regular college is 36 months. At West Point, it's 47 because you don't really get any time off, you know, because your summers are spoken for. And before you even begin class in September, you report in early June, in late June, before September. So it's a 47-month experience. And so that experience has a lot of academics, athletics, extracurriculars. It's just very busy.
Yeah, I'm already imagining how hectic your schedule was at that time. Do you still get to see your family in that 47 months?
Back then, you couldn't because, you know, we didn't have all the electronics. You know, it's basically a paid phone call in a phone booth once a week. But now you can zoom in to see your family.
I know. The generation nowadays are very lucky with this kind of technology.
Or unlucky because then you have a lot of supervision. You know, helicopter parenting.
Yes, I would agree with that, sir. Well, with my previous guests, sir, the boot camp, whenever I ask that question, they would give me insights about majority of them would, you know, have crying nights, you know, they would think twice of their decision of joining the service because of the physical challenges, I would say, during the trainings. Did you get to experience those instances as well, sir?
Of course, of course. The physical part was really no problem, but, you know, the academic part was a little tough. You're in class with the smartest people in the country. Everybody's brilliant. Yeah, I didn't mind the 5 mile runs, but all the tests and papers and everything you had to do, that was the stress. But I wasn't valedictorian either. It's half the people were not as good as me. Didn't know the other half were better. So I was right in the middle.
Okay, so you finished with the 4 years in West Point. So what happened next to Sunny after that? Was your first assignment out overseas already, sir? Would you remember?
Well, the first assignment was training at Fort Benning. You had to go through basic infantry training, and then went to a ranger school, then went to a parachute school. That took all about a year before I went to my first assignment in the Panama Canal Zone. Yeah, that was in Panama for 3 years, and I loved it. That was probably my best assignment. As a platoon leader, executive officer, it was a great time.
This podcast is powered by Anchor.fm. Making a podcast is free and easy with Anchor.fm. That's great to hear. If you can just give me, sir, a background about what do you do when you're in the infantry division? I'm clueless.
Well, the Army has different branches. Right now, there are 18 branches. If you were to join the Army as an officer, there's basically 18 branches you could go into. There are the combat branches and the combat service support and support branches. Infantry is what I think is the Army. It's the foot soldier, the person who actually goes out in front and does the main fighting. They also get shot the most, too. And to me, and to a lot of people, when they see an Army man, that's the infantryman. He's the guy with the backpack and the rifle going out to the front. I was that. And then, the other parts of the infantry are the tankers, the ones that drive the tanks. And then you have the artillery guys who shoot the cannons. And then you have the helicopter pilots and the engineers and, you can so on and so forth. It's all important. I'm not saying one is better than the other. But if you want to be at the tip of the spear where the action is, join the infantry. Because when it comes time to fight and die, it's the infantrymen right in the front first.
I see. So now I have a better picture of what infantry is. So if I would base it on what we usually see in the movies, that's the infantry division?
What, did you see Private Ryan?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, he was an infantryman. Private Ryan was an infantryman. Those guys, if you're going to be in the Army, that's what you want to do. Otherwise, join the Navy or Air Force. But if you're going to join the Army, it's being a foot soldier.
Interesting. Wow. See, I'm really learning a lot from you, sir. And we're just in the first half of the interview. So thank you for that information, sir. So you were in Panama for 3 years. Would you remember anything that's, memorable while you were in Panama? Something that you wouldn't really forget?
Well, I mean, I remember everything because it was my first assignment. So everything was new and wonderful. What I really liked it, probably the most enjoyable time I had as an officer, because I was only responsible for my platoon of 30 people and was able to bond with them and lead them and develop them, socialize. That was just my responsibility, was to take care of my 30 people, my platoon. Then in the beginning of my third year there, I was the executive officer, which was the second in charge of the company. A company is about 150 people. That wasn't as much fun because now you have more responsibilities. Whereas when you're a young officer, you have less responsibilities, but you also know less too. That's why they give you less responsibilities. But as you go up in rank, you have to do more and more and more. So, but then it becomes enjoyable also. So what I liked about Panama was it was very jungle terrain. So I just enjoy being in the jungle and being outdoors.
So there were, jungle, I'm expecting, sir, wild animals were loitering around.
Right, but they try to stay away from you. What I don't like is the mosquitoes and the bugs and everything. That's the hard part. The big animals will go away. They don't want anything to do with you, except maybe the crocodiles. It's mostly the insects. That's the ones that bother you the most.
Okay, sir. So after Panama, you were assigned next to...
Well, I was assigned to... the 7th Infantry Division at Fort Ord, California, where I was the company commander. So I had a company of 200 men.
Now that's 200.
Now it's 200. You're in charge of 200 people. Then you're also in charge of all the logistics, care and feeding, which I had to learn how to do, which is part of the job.
Oh my goodness. That's a lot of people under you, sir.
Well, you have a lot of help.
That's true. And your assignment in California was another 3 years.
Right.
And then so after California, so from overseas, you went back to the mainland. And then was the next one another overseas assignment?
No, I went. I was selected to go to graduate school to get a master's degree in international relations. I applied to get a master's degree, and I was sent to University of North Carolina for a year and a half.
Oh, so that's where international relations started.
Well, it started at West Point because that was my minor, my degree, and because I was always interested in international relations. I took language courses and international relations courses. In fact, I knew that I wanted that track all along. But see, at that time, all the graduates of West Point had to have the same major. We all had the same degree. We all graduated as engineers. And I was the world's worst engineer.
Why would you say that, sir?
Well, I hated it. I mean, I had no talent for it. I didn't like it. The only reason I had to take it because it's the only thing they offered.
Right.
So the sooner I could get out of that mess, I was so happy.
So you've always been interested with history and
geography and political science and economics. Yes. That engineering stuff, forget it. But I do have a diploma that says I'm an engineer, so I just want you to know that.
Yes, yay! That's very good. So you're an engineer.
You know how much discipline it takes to take up a course of study that you detest? Yeah, 4 years. I mean, 4 years to take a courses that you don't like. That was the hard part.
That must be an agony for you.
Right. Yeah. For some people, it's easy.
As what you've said, you have a diploma that you are an engineer, and also, you know, you also have international relations, and that's the one that you're really passionate about. So, sir, the overseas assignments are considered deployment. Am I right, sir?
Yes, yes. Well, not a deployment; it's an assignment.
So, other than Panama, where you had other overseas assignments, sir?
Yes, but for shorter terms. That was the only long-term one. I mean, I spent many months in Korea, and then other short-term assignments back in Latin America. But those were deployments because you're sent out from your base and going out for a few months and come back.
I see. Okay. And you've mentioned about, because you took up the master's international relations and you are into foreign languages. How many foreign languages do you know?
That's a good way to put it. How many do I know? Or how many, because most people would ask, how many do you actually speak? Well, you know, I'm fluent in Spanish, but not because I'm Filipino, obviously. But I just took Spanish at West Point, and then I was an exchange student in Colombia for a semester. And then the Army sent me to language training for Spanish. But then in the State Department, I went to language school for Chinese and Arabic.
Chinese is very difficult to learn.
Well, you know, there's a 1.3 billion Chinese who speak, so how hard can it be?
Yes, if we think of it that way, if they can learn it, I can too. So that's one way to put it.
That's right. You know, one out of every six persons on this planet speaks Chinese.
That's true. So with regards, sir, to, okay, how long were you then in the service?
I had 10 years active duty, but then I spent reserve time after that. Because after I transitioned to the State Department, I had to give up the Army bit. But after graduate school, I expected to be sent to an embassy as an Army attaché. That was my goal, was to be an attaché at a foreign embassy in Latin America. They sent me to language training for Spanish, had my degree, all set to go. Then what happened was I got reassigned to the Army School of the Americas, which is the school for Latin American officers studying in the U.S. who couldn't speak English. So they had to be taught in Spanish. But that was in Georgia, which I didn't really like. I didn't want to be in Georgia. I wanted to be in Latin America. But then the Army said, but we need you to speak to these officers who are training in the U.S. and they don't speak English, they only speak Spanish. So I was giving classes all in Spanish to Latin American officers who came to the States for training at the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia. Did that for 3 years, 3 years.
Okay, so I was about to ask you, sir, earlier. So from your military service, was that really like your long-term goal to be a diplomatic officer?
Right. I wanted to be a diplomatic officer. I also wanted to be an infantryman. I like being an infantryman. I just like running around in the woods playing army man. So I figured I could do both.
Okay. So when did you join the State Department?
I joined it after 10 years in the Army. I always knew about the State Department because I worked with State Department people. When I would go to Washington, when I would take my students up there. So I joined it in 1987.
1987.
When the State Department. You just take the exam and go through the process. It took 2 years of exams and clearances and tests and everything. So.
Okay.
But finally, I made it.
Yes. And so in 1987, you became correct me if I'm wrong, sir, is that like automatic, you're a vice consul already in the U.S.
Embassy? Right, right. FSO, Foreign Service Officer.
Foreign Service Officer, that's right. And your first assignment was where?
Honduras.
Honduras. Wow. And how was the experience in Honduras?
I loved it. I had three daughters by then. The eldest was, I think, 7 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So my wife and I enjoyed it very much. In fact, it's probably one of our favorite assignments because the people were nice, the country was lovely. But besides that, the issues we were working on were very important. You know, a lot of your job satisfaction comes with what you're working on. And back in 1987 through 89, Honduras was something that registered very importantly on the radar of Washington because, you know, we were fighting communists.
If I may just ask, sir, because you've mentioned about you have children already when you got into Honduras. So if I could just step back a bit. So when did you meet your beautiful wife, Miss Ceres?
I met her my senior year at West Point.
Oh, okay. So during your assignments, like in Panama, you were already married.
Yes.
Is it okay, sir, if I just ask, how did you meet Miss Ceres?
Well, she was visiting West Point one day. She was a nurse. She's Philippine nurse from San Narciso Zambales, and she was working in a hospital in New Jersey, and she and her chums were just taking a day trip to the campus, a bunch of beautiful nurses walking around, and there I was all by my lonesome. 46 years later, we're still together.
Well, yay! Wow! That is very, I would say, would you consider that, sir, as a love at first sight when you saw her?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm not very good at talking about these things, but I just knew it was going to be. I knew. I don't know if she knew, but
I'm sure she does, sir. So she just came from the Philippines during that time and had visited in West Point. Wow, that's very, very interesting. Okay, so you got married. Your first assignment in Panama, she was already with you. Did she get to practice her? You mentioned she's a nurse, so she get to practice nursing as well wherever you go.
Yes, oh yes, wherever we went, nursing's very portable.
It is, and also very advantageous on your end when you get sick. You already have a nurse at home.
Well, yeah, that's the good part. The bad part is that you get a lot of care that you. Unsolicited care.
Unsolicited care. Okay, wow, that's very interesting. Okay, so when you mentioned about when you were in Honduras, you are already with the Foreign Service. All three girls were born already in Honduras?
Yes.
While you were in Honduras?
I mean, well, we brought them to Honduras. They'd already been.
And then after Honduras, where did you go next?
The State Department, in its infinite wisdom, took advantage of my expertise in Latin America and language capabilities, because I'd already traveled throughout the region. So I figured I was going to stay in Latin America for the rest of my career. So logically, I got sent to Korea.
You got sent to Korea. Wow. So that would be your second time in Korea.
Well, no, the first time was just for small deployments, but this is for a tour, the 2-year assignment.
And in Korea, you were still a vice consul at the time?
Yes. I was promoted to consul just as I was leaving.
Afterthought on the Military Family is a proud member of the Rumble Royale Podcast Network. Thanks for listening. If you are new here and enjoyed this episode, please follow the podcast by tapping the bell to be notified of new episodes. This helps military families who want to live their best lives find the show. And if you would like to share your story, please connect with us through our Facebook page, Mommy Reg, and we would love for you to be part of the show. Remember, you are not alone. Until next time,